This week on Capitalism, Race, and Democracy.
The history of USA, people must remember, it was started in 1961, simultaneous with the Peace Corps. So it was supposed to be a cover for the CIA.
Obiagbuna of the Congo-Zimbabwe Friendship Association discusses Trump's shutdown of USAID and the history of U.S. foreign policy in Latin America.
They are wanting to build international labor solidarity on the basis of governmental funding. And so they've gotten over $1 billion over this time that's been unreported to its own members. It's been kept secret and hidden.
Trump and Musk's Department of Government Efficiency has shut down the National Endowment for Democracy, the primary funder of the AFL-CIO's Solidarity Center, and its foreign regime change operations.
We need to be supporting our political prisoners and our elders who have fought for us, and organize ourselves in a manner that helps us take care of ourselves.
A mutual aid for veteran Black Panther Party members campaign is underway in California, where every month, different veterans in need are given supplemental income.
But they didn't transfer people a lot. If you were good on your job, you stayed on your job. What happened? You burned out your arms, you burned out your shoulders. It was just terrible.
A Tesla Fremont, California assembly worker who quit the company speaks out about the real conditions working at Musk's factory and why he'd had enough. From Pacifica Radio, this is Capitalism, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and affiliates across the U.S. I'm your host, Ann Garrison. Block Report Radio's J.R. Valre recently sat down with Obiagbuna, the external officer of the Zimbabwe-Cuba Friendship Association, to discuss the U.S. government's 63-year blockade on Cuba. They also talked about the deportation of U.S. migrants to Guantanamo Bay and El Salvador, the history of U.S. foreign policy towards Colombia, and Trump's recent attack on USAID.
Biden, in his last week in office, signed legislation to take Cuba off of the state sponsors of terrorist list, which would have had a huge impact. A week later, Mark Rubio, under the Trump regime, basically reversed it and put Cuba back on the list. What were your thoughts?
Political version of a relay race. Biden passed the baton to Trump. Biden procrastinated. It wasn't genuine. And Trump opportunistically did what was expected. You have to remember that there's no difference between Bill Menendez, the former chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee of the U.S. Senate, and Mark Rubio, except one is a Democrat and one is a Republican. In the same way that the only difference between Condoleezza Rice and Susan Rice is first name, but they are both products of Madeleine Albright's white supremacist imperialist training. And remember, it's the Democratic Party that initiated diplomatic terrorism towards Cuba by imposing the blockade in 62 after a failed Bay of Pigs invasion. So if Biden was genuine about it, he wouldn't have let Menendez intimidate him his whole time in office, knowing he was backed by the FBI office in New Jersey and the state troopers in New Jersey who are responsible for Assata Shakur being on the FBI's terrorist list and the $2 million bounty on her head. That's why we have the campaign. So it was a relay race. Biden passed the baton to Trump.
Recently, it has been announced that Cuba has joined the economic bloc known as BRICS. Can you talk about how that may change Cuba's economic situation, specifically in light of the fact that Cuba has been suffering blackouts on a regular basis since this summer? Can you give us your thoughts?
They always have to maneuver diplomatically to deal with the impact of the blockade. The resolve of the people is what it is. The unity of the people is what it is. But the reality is the blockade has cost them nearly $200 billion in over 60 years. So any creative measure that they have, whether they rally at the United Nations, whether they attend the African South American summits, whether they conjure up support with what's left of the non-aligned movement, they are forced by circumstance to always explore creative measures. Even when they started letting people develop small businesses on the island, and people here had the audacity to say this was their first exploration and curiosity with capitalism, if you will. But the blockade has caused them to come up with all type of creative measures, but thanks to the unity of the people, the resolve of the people, and the commitment of the revolution. So we welcome their commitment to BRICS. We welcome their commitment to maintaining their course no matter what the obstacles are, as best demonstrated when the Soviet Union disbanded and they went through what was called the special period, which many people are comparing Cuba to right now.
U.S. President Trump has recently announced that deportees from the United States will be going to Cuba. Supposedly, it has been reported that flights have actually started. And what's important about this is that the United States is trying to house deportees in Guantanamo Bay as well as in El Salvador. But in Cuba, the president called it a barbaric act, what Trump was doing. But in El Salvador, it is being welcomed. And also, in addition, Bukele of El Salvador is also inviting Trump to bring United States citizens that are prisoners to the prison in El Salvador. Can you speak on the situation with Guantanamo as well as the situation with El Salvador in regards to the imprisonment of deportees as well as U.S. citizens?
Sure. Well, number one, in the case of Guantanamo Bay, thanks to the resolve of the Cuban people, the solidarity with the Cuban Revolution and camaraderie with the Cuban Revolution, the overwhelming majority of the world is against the blockade. Only two nations are in favor: U.S. imperialism, the perpetrator, and the real nation's capital, the Zionist State of Israel. But sometimes it overshadows the fact that the United States has a military base there, Guantanamo Bay. And if you know imperialism's history, whether you look at the Wheeler's base in Libya, whether you look at the base they had in Vieques, Puerto Rico, that contaminated Puerto Rico, whether you look at the base in Panama in connection to Operation Just Cause, where Panama was bombed based on the orchestration of Colin Powell, whether you look at the U.S. Africa Military Command effort. So this is another emphasis by us to show why U.S. imperialism should have no bases, military bases, anywhere in the world. In relationship to the El Salvador question, Brother J.R., you have to go back to 2001 when the government of El Salvador allowed the U.S. military to build a base adjacent to the airport. And this is when Plan Colombia was introduced, which was an effort by imperialism under the auspices of fighting the war on drugs, which the CIA is the main perpetuator of. But through their propaganda, they claimed that they wanted to position themselves in El Salvador so they could watch drug trafficking all over the Americas. But this was just an effort. And there was a meeting in El Salvador with progressive and revolutionary forces all over the Americas that was supposed to take place at the University of San Salvador. And the U.S. ambassador called the president of the National University of San Salvador, and they canceled being the host of the venue. And within 11 hours, the FMLN and others who were in support of this encounter with Plan Colombia had to find three different locations, one on Friday, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. And with the loss of the Colombian government that they once controlled, Colombia looked like an extension of the United States. They have to now invest in El Salvador, hoping El Salvador will be for them moving forward, which Colombia was for years, a satellite for them to intensify their military and intelligence efforts, equivalent to the U.S. Africa Military Command on the continent.
Can you speak on El Salvador basically inviting Trump to bring prisoners that are deportees as well as U.S. citizens to Salvadorian prisons?
With the militarization of the Americas, which is what Plan Colombia represented, I emphasize El Salvador was supposed to be the base for that. So this is just the latest act in that tradition. 45 years ago, Oscar Romero was assassinated on March 24, 1980. And then Howard University sent some journalists down there for WHUR. They were assassinated by the military government of El Salvador. And three Mary Noel nuns were assassinated. So El Salvador has a history of neoliberalism and neocolonialism. And this overture by Bukele is the latest example of that tradition. So it's a cultural warfare and political warfare going on all over the Americas, going back to Kennedy's dictum that there should never be another revolution to flourish in the Americas after Cuba.
You talked a little bit about it in the last question, but can you talk a little bit about the history of Colombia in regards to the United States, the Monroe Doctrine, and the role it's played back in the day, as well as what the problems are now?
Well, in the case of currently, because of the African vice president, the Honorable Franco Marquez, and the decision by that government to restructure the police and military in Colombia, the United States lost a formidable ally. The Monroe Doctrine was nothing but an attempt to promote the tradition of annexation in the Americas. We started with Cuba. Many people forget, Brother J.R. and listeners, the first seven presidents of the United States wanted to annex Cuba. There's a beautiful book in Cuba called Uncle Sam's Unaccomplished Dream, Angela Grau Imperatore, that chronicles this whole effort. And then when you look at what Colombia means strategically, and if you remember, Chiquita Banana was supposed to go on trial for supporting death squads in Colombia, but the former U.S. Attorney General, Eric Holder, used his influence to put the case in civil court, not criminal court, because it was a violation of even what the decree of Homeland Security. So through corporations like Chiquita, through the drug merchants, through U.S. militarism, Colombia, Panama, El Salvador have always been outlets that imperialism wants to use for strategic purposes, both on a diplomatic and a military front, to corner Cuba. Take a look at what's going on in Nicaragua. This is what they used to overthrow Morales in Bolivia. This is what they're using to try to bring about regime change in Venezuela. And if you remember, during Trump's last term, the former Vice President Mike Pence went before the Organization of American States and asked that Venezuela be expelled from that effort, which was a counter because the Bolivarian Alliance of our Americas, better known as the ALBA Nations, Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela, Suriname, and Haiti, said that the United States Agency for International Development should be shown the door all throughout the Americas.
Well, that leads to my last question. What do you think about what Trump is doing with USAID, especially after all of these new exposures that are coming out? I've seen a report where it says that 6,000 reporters were being paid by USAID. There's a number of people that are reporting on the role that USAID played in different coups around the world, in Latin America and Africa and other places. But can you talk about what Trump is doing with USAID as well as its history?
Well, the history of USAID, people must remember, it was started in 1961, simultaneous with the Peace Corps. So it was supposed to be a cover for the CIA. And when we look at 1961 as Africans, of course, we think of the assassination of Lumumba. We think of the failed Bay of Pigs invasion. And President Obama's mother, Stanley Ann Durham, was one of the first officers, which explains why a woman of Caucasian makeup would be hanging out in Indonesia trying to bring about the overthrow of the Sukarno government. It has always been a diplomatic outlet in posture, but it has always been an intelligence agent at its core, at its rooting. In 2005, Afwerki of Eritrea expelled them from Africa, one of the most courageous diplomatic acts of the 20th century. Putin expelled them from Russia. And then the Bolivarian Alliance of the Americas, who we mentioned, they followed suit. So we have always felt that we should rise up against the United States Agency for International Development and shut them down. Because at this moment, to condemn AFRICOM is the equivalent of marching against police terrorism on North American borders. It's a given. But this is an example of what Kwame Ture warned us about. At different points, those of us who are revolutionary and considered on the extreme left, we will target the same entities that imperialism targets on the extreme right, but for different reasons, period. So we are attacking USAID because it is an imperialist outlet. It is a neocolonialist outlet. It is a neoliberalist outlet. Whatever Trump's purpose is, it's to come up with something equivalent to it. The same way Clinton said he would shut down the CIA and let it be consumed by the FBI's International Terrorist Division. The same way the School of America's just simply changed its name, but not its focus.
That was Obiag Buna, the External Officer of the Zimbabwe-Cuba Friendship Association, speaking to J.R. Valre.
I swear to tell the truth and nothing but the truth. So help me God. Yeah.
America is slowly dying. Of a self-inflicted wound from a weapon that we're supplying. The past seeds of hatred that race in our bloodstream. We can't agree to disagree on the most basic of things. What's a man? What's a woman? What's the shape of the earth? When does human life begin? At conception or during birth? Meanwhile, the projects is more violent, and the Democratic Party stays silent. That's poverty pimping. That's when politics are poverty driven, and they pander to poor communities to get moral impunity. Capitalism is a black man's hell, but Marxism comes from Europe as well. It's not African. So pick a side to collect from. We run away from one slave master into the arms of the next one. And every 2 to 4 years they pump fear, and we auction off our vote in exchange for some false hope. Listen, it's that blatant. Enslave us through taxation. Send money to Ukraine and you paying at the gas station. Cause this administration had plans for the inflation. Natural gas is the actual task. Check the pipeline. Now they wanna fight crime. We tools in the plot. They wasn't talking gun reform back when Boo Boo got shot. Drug addiction was not a disease when Nunu had rocks. Now they change and readjust words cause meth is in the suburbs. In the 90s, Biden locked up our people for coke. Now he's using taxpayer dollars to buy pipes so niggas can smoke. You don't see the contradiction? Or you too busy double tap dancing to pay attention? This is legislative lynching, economic Jim Crow. They feed us violence and spirits to keep us spiritually poor. Is this conspiracy? No, far beyond the music. That crime bill defines still how juveniles are prosecuted. We prostitute ourselves for the wealthy, it's not healthy. Fly across country for protests just to get a selfie. Meanwhile, the news outlets exploit it and traditional black values get voided.
That was Locksmith, America. You're listening to Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm your host, Ann Garrison. The National Endowment for Democracy, the largest funder of the AFL-CIO Solidarity Center, has been shut down under Trump and Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. Led by AFL-CIO President Liz Schuler, the center received 96% of its funding from USAID and the State Department, operating in 62 countries with a $73 million budget and over 400 employees. Despite the NED's major role in the AFL-CIO, Schuler and other leaders have remained silent on the shutdown, failing to inform affiliates or address the future of their international operations and impacted workers. For decades, labor activists have demanded transparency on AFL-CIO's international activities, including its historic collaboration with the CIA in overthrowing Chile's Allende government and supporting U.S.-backed coups across Latin America. Pacifica's Steve Seltzer spoke with Purdue University professor Kim Sipes and retired UAW Local 909 president Frank Hammer about the significance of this closure and the urgent need to hold AFL-CIO leaders accountable.
So, Kim, why don't you talk about what the Solidarity Center is for workers, and most workers do not know about this international operation of the AFL-CIO. So why don't you talk about what it is? And
okay, Steve, thanks for having me. The AFL-CIO has been operating internationally for over 100 years. These operations have been unknown to most members, in fact, even most leaders. They have been funded by the U.S. government around the world. In 1983, Ronald Reagan started the National Endowment for Democracy.
The National Endowment for Democracy is, just as we've been told, more than bipartisan. It's a genuine partnership of Republicans and Democrats, of labor and business, conservatives and liberals, and of the executive and legislative branches of government.
And one of the agencies put in there was the AFL-CIO. Now, they called their international operation, well, they changed after 97, and it became the International Labor Solidarity Center, and then later just Solidarity Center. But it's the AFL-CIO's foreign operations. It's controlled by the AFL-CIO executive department. In fact, probably a small number of them. And it determines AFL-CIO operations around the world. Now, I must say they have never told their members about this. They've never given an honest report that can be independently verified by researchers. They are operating behind the backs, but in the name of AFL-CIO members. So when you hear Solidarity Center, they try to say, well, it's a detached section of the AFL-CIO. No, it's not. It's right at the center. Their offices are on the 8th floor of the AFL-CIO headquarters in Washington, D.C. So Solidarity Center supposedly is building international solidarity relations. The interesting thing, and I think this is what you're touching on, Steve, is that they are wanting to build international labor solidarity on the basis of governmental funding. And so they've gotten over 90% of their budget, certainly since 1983, from the government, actually goes back into the early 60s. And my back of the pocket estimate is over a billion dollars over this time that's been unreported to its own members. It's been kept secret and hidden. So now this is coming to light.
And Frank, you were involved, your brother worked for the NED, and you have some familiarity with it in Latin America and Colombia. What does this mean to you, and what's the importance of workers in this country understanding about the Solidarity Center and its closure by the shutdown of the National Endowment for Democracy? What's behind it?
Yeah, just a couple of facts that I want to throw in there. There was a precursor to the Solidarity Center in all three continents. In Latin America, it was once called the American Institute for Free Labor Development, and that's the agency that employed my brother starting in the early 60s. And my brother was an operative and a country program director for the precursor to the Solidarity Center. But he was gunned down in 1981 by reactionary forces in El Salvador, where he was working, and he was working with campesinos. So a couple of years later, and that's when Ronald Reagan replaced the original funder for AFIELD, which is the CIA, to give it a more non-governmental, non-CIA front. But it was very clear that NED was replacing the CIA in terms of directing the operations of the AFL-CIO international operations. And that's the NED has been functioning in that capacity ever since. Clearly, the motivations of the federal government, Reagan, Congress, and funding us is to oppose any progressive left-led movements in the labor movement around the world. And the Solidarity Center was, in fact, and its precursor, the CIA as well, were very successful in destroying left-led movements, even left-led governments. And if we fast forward to today, the NED has sort of fulfilled its function for the U.S. government by, in fact, doing such a debilitating effect on left-led movements. And kind of like today is now saying, well, you know what? We don't really need you anymore. You've done your work. And now we see the defunding of the Solidarity Center. And what's striking is that so far, there's not a word that's been said about it. And I just want to make a reference that there was an article that appeared in last November, shortly after Trump got elected. And it said, DOGE's, right, Department of Government Efficiency, best first target, the National Endowment for Democracy. So it's been in the crosshairs, and it's right up on the top of the list.
And of course, the AFL-CIO Solidarity Center have been involved in overthrows of governments, the Allende government, governments in Argentina and Brazil, and been involved in trying to overthrow the Venezuelan government. The operations of the AFL-CIO also have not been reported to the members. And in Colombia, where you were working with some GM workers who were fighting, the injured GM workers were fighting for compensation. They had an encampment for 11 years in front of the embassy, the U.S. embassy. That was never reported by the Solidarity Center Colombia operations, even though they're supposed to be reporting on what's going on in Colombia. Did that have anything to do with the fact that they really didn't want to fight U.S. multinationals in Colombia and in Latin America?
Well, it's very clear that the function of the Solidarity Center in Colombia in regard to the GM workers, the injured fired GM workers, was to get the workers to agree to a proposal that would have satisfied General Motors, but it would have been completely debilitating for the workers. And the workers rejected this offer, which was over a decade ago. And subsequent to that, the Solidarity Center went along with General Motors and was satisfied to leave the workers in their tent encampment in front of the U.S. Embassy. So the Solidarity Center was basically wanting to accommodate the interests of capital and specifically of General Motors in Colombia, and it failed miserably because the workers didn't accept the inferior settlement. And from then that point forward, yes, the Solidarity Center was absolutely hush, and in some instances actually betrayed the workers at the encampment, which still exists and stands to this day. So they played not a very productive and constructive role for something in the name of international worker solidarity. Workers in this country, by and large, are not aware of the struggle and of the courage of these GM workers.
And Kim, you've written some books on the role of the AFL-CIO internationally in the Philippines and other countries, and the operations, they operate in 62 countries. Their website is still up, and they've operated in the Philippines, Asia. Why the silence by the AFL-CIO about the shutdown of this major operation? They have 400 employees, they're all 62 countries, and not a word, no notice, no report by the AFL-CIO. What's going on?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. Obviously, they don't want attention to what they've been doing around the world. Something I've been writing on since 1989, trying to illuminate what's going on in different places. I mean, you know, I found a case in the Philippines. I've written a book on the KMU of the Philippines. And in my research, I found out that the largest affiliate of the Trade Union Congress of the Philippines, which was a creation of the Marcos dictatorship, that they were trying to, this affiliate was trying to take the largest copper mine operation from a KMU union, and they were collaborating with death squads. And I'm not exaggerating. I mean, several workers were killed. Even the mother of one of the workers was killed. So they've done work like this. We've exposed that. Rob McKenzie came out with a very good book called El Golpe about the operations in Mexico. So over time, both before and after the NED, the Solidarity Center, the so-called Solidarity Center, has been funded by U.S. government money, and they don't want us, they don't want anybody to know. They don't want the members to know. They don't want the public to know. And I think what they're doing is they're just, you know, their whole operation that's been funded by U.S. government money instead of workers' dues or whatever, they don't want the public to know that that's out there. And I think they're embarrassed. I think at best they may be ashamed, but they don't want this stuff to come to light. And on the other hand, we think it's important that it do come to light, because we believe that workers' solidarity should be created by workers, that it should be funded by workers, it should be reported on workers, it should be transparent to workers. And the AFL-CIO, by depending on the U.S. government, has decided on the AFL-CIO leadership, because it's never gone to the members. They've decided that they want to take U.S. government money. It's a lot easier to get and do whatever they want to behind the backs of their members.
Yeah, I think it's really important to recognize that the way the conservative movement, the MAGA movement, the intellectual arm of it, the way they've see it, is that the NED fulfilled its function in crushing left-wing and movements and governments. And now, having accomplished that mission, the Solidarity Center, and the other part of its mission was sort of to kind of oppose fascism, to oppose the right. And right now, with the Trump regime, they're not looking too favorably on any kind of centrist opposition, as what the Solidarity Center would provide, any centrist opposition to fascism and to these right-wing movements. And it's articulated in their own documents that this is the reason they're now going after the Solidarity Center. In other words, you fulfilled your function, you're kind of messing with us now, we've had it, you're done. I think it represents an incredible opportunity for our labor movement to now look at this failed strategy, so-called, of the AFL-CIO for labor solidarity internationally, and say, clearly that was really phony. It was dependent on the U.S. government. The U.S. government pulled the plug. It is now up to us to pick up the pieces and say, how do we build a real international solidarity movement worthy of the name?
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us. It looks like we're breaking the story nationally about the closure of a solidarity center. So hopefully when workers hear that it's closed, we can begin the discussion and debate. What was it doing? I mean, how much money did it take? $1 billion. How come working people in this country don't even know about what it was doing and the kind of money it was taking and where it was going? So thanks for joining in solidarity, brothers.
Solidarity. Thank you. Thank you, Steve, for doing this.
That was Pacifica's Steve Seltzer speaking with Purdue University professor Kim Sipes and retired UAW Local 909 president Frank Hammer.
They buy here because it's the cheapest, because we abuse our labor, keep them part-time, working 40 plus a week, no health insurance, and it gets better. We can buy in bulk from China, make $2 off for every penny spent in sweatshops, or buy the judge, jury, politicians, newspapers, TV stations. Then we can tell them what they want, exactly how to get it, monopolize till we own the earth and moon, then expand to other planets. More we conquer, then the more we profit. Record earnings every quarter, billions of bonuses paid stockholders. Get rich off the backs of the poor, sell store more and more to our company store. Record earnings every quarter, billions of bonuses paid stockholders. Get rich off the backs of the poor, sell store more and more to our company store. Off the backs of the board. Get rich off the backs of the board. Now that was just a broad view of the focus of our discussion.
That was Kill the Autocrat, Give Me More. Next, Jarrah Valray sat down with Jordan McGowan of Community Movement Builders to discuss the Mutual Aid for Veteran Black Panther Party members campaign that is currently underway in California, where every month, different veterans in need are given supplemental income, since being a revolutionary community organizer does not come with a pension in the USA.
Before we get into this special night that supporters of the Black Panther Party and the Panthers veterans are throwing, can you tell the people a little bit about the Mutual Aid for Veteran Black Panther Party members? What is that fund about? When did it start? And can you give us a little bit of history about it?
Yeah, so Community Movement Builders, which I'm a part of, we are a national organization, and part of our work is, right, we believe in taking care of our elders. And so a few years ago, we started this fund, right, as almost a way for Panthers, you know, veteran Panthers or folks in the Black Liberation Struggle to have some type of pension, right? You know, everybody else gets a Social Security check or whatever, whatever. Folks who organized for the people and fought empire, they don't have those resources, right? They didn't get a retirement check for that. And so what we've done at CMB is we put together this Patreon account, which, you know, we have folks who subscribe every month. And then as that money comes in, we redistribute that to about five or six Panthers, different Panthers every month, so that somebody can get some of their needs taken care of. Again, it's not a lot, but we're doing what we can, and we've reached a lot of folks over the few years that we've had it. So our goal, I've recently stepped onto that committee, and so my vision was to try to grow this to, you know, at least $5,000-$6,000 every month that comes in, because right now we're sending about $2,600. We kind of been fluctuating between like $25,000 and $3,000 every month that come in via Patreon. So we want to try to increase that every month, right? Because that again means more people are getting more money. And so that's what we're hoping to do. So we're really hoping to drive up folks, not only just to come for the night, right, but to understand what we're doing and be long-term supporters of this project and continuing to make sure that our veterans of the movement are taken care of.
Can you tell us a little bit about what a night with the Panthers, what will that consist of? Where's the event at? Who will be performing or who will be speaking? You know, give us some of the details.
Yeah, so we're really excited. Our team is bringing down some poets, right? We are going to have a film that is screened as well, which is episode one of A Living Legacy of the Black Panther Party, which is a docuseries that our team has put together at CMB Neighbor Program. We're going to have some veteran Panthers in attendance who are down to speak and share a little bit. And so we're at Project 43 in L.A., which is 6841 Crenshaw Boulevard. And then I know we're also organizing one in the coming months in Northern California. So I hope, you know, for the folks who can't make it down to L.A., we will be having one in the Bay Area coming up. But we had the Panthers in L.A. reach out first and said, you know, that they wanted to help support this, you know, this effort and get the fund going. And so started it in L.A., and then, like I said, we're going to bring it back up to the Bay Area in the next few months. And so our goal is, again, to try to do these in a few places so that we can continue to drive up the fund and continue to help more folks.
With the lack of healthcare coverage in the Black community, why do you think cooperatives such as this are important for Black people to start practicing?
I think that for so long, I think we all, like you said, like the stats and the data is there, right? We know that our folks are massively undercovered or not taken care of. But really, again, the Panthers taught us that it's up to us to take care of our own people. But what's, you know, really sad and sickening is that these elders who have taught us so many lessons and fought for us, like actually fought for us, right, are being left in the dust. And I think a lot of that has to do with just, you know, the propaganda that is pushed on us. And so it's our goal, again, to remind folks the same way that we want to support these famous artists, the same way that we want to support whoever, right, we need to be supporting our, you know, our political prisoners and our elders who have fought for us and organize ourselves in the manner that helps us take care of ourselves. So I think that this is a step in that direction. And again, hopefully just a demonstration of that we can take care of ourselves, right, and continue on that legacy of what the Panthers taught us.
How can people get more information online?
So you can definitely go to the Community Movement Builders Instagram, or I know we have an Eventbrite. You can pull up, you can even go to our Patreon page and find, you know, and subscribe. Folks who are, you know, subscribers to the Patreon at a certain level get a free ticket for the event. And we'll be running that, as again, as long as we continue to do these events, right? So whether you're in LA, whether you're in, if we do it in the Bay Area, if we do it in, you know, another region of the country, if you are a subscriber to the Patreon account, right, then you'll have access to, right, coming to that event. Because again, the end goal is to get people as monthly subscribers, not just, you know, oh, I want to come, write it off, you know, $50, $100, whatever, whatever. We want people who are committed to sustaining this project, hopefully, and again, understanding what it is that we're trying to do and provide for the people.
That was Jordan McGowan of Community Movement Builders speaking to J.R. Valray of Block Report Radio. BlockReportRadioWorld.com.
This song is dedicated to the mothers and the children of the revolution, to Tupac and to Afeni Shakur, many, many more. This is for you. One love. One light. Can you see the pride in the panther as she nurtures her young all alone? It's the seed that must grow regardless of the fact that it's been planted in stone. Can you see the pride of the panther in the concrete jungle alone with her cub? It's the seed that must come to harvest. It's the tree that must grow out of love. Can you see the pride in the panther as he glows in splendor and grace, toppling obstacles placed in the way of the progression of his race? Can you see the pride in the panther as she nurtures her young all alone? The seed must grow regardless of the fact that it's planted in stone. Can't you see the pride in the panther as they unify as one? The flower blooms with brilliance and outshines all the rays of the sun. Keeps bright like the rays of the sun. Carries out like the rays of the sun. Keeps bright like the rays of the sun. Shines bright like a new day begun. Can you see the pride in the panther as he glows in splendor and grace, toppling the obstacles placed in the way of the progression of his race? Can you see the pride in the panther as she nurtures her young all alone? The seed must grow regardless of the fact that it's been planted and sown. Can't you see the pride in the panthers as they unify as one? The flower bloom.
That was Mos Def, Can You See the Pride in the Panther? Branton Phillips, an assembly line worker at Tesla's Fremont, California factory, quit the company last month after years working there. He talked about the real conditions working at Musk's factory, which employs 20,000 workers, and why he'd had enough. He spoke to Pacifica's Steve Seltzer.
What led you to resign from Tesla Fremont plant?
A number of things, actually. Again, if you follow what I've done or try to do at the
Tesla plant was try to get a union in there. We try to really work for the workers. It was fine a long time ago when you're fighting just one obstacle, but literally in the last year, and this is political, but in the last year I've watched literally this uncensored maniac, that's Elon Musk, just basically start to ruin America. I just can't see it any easier than that. And it's one thing to go in every single day and work for an ideology that you thought was really good, and maybe it's still good, with the whole solar, with everything to do with transitioning to sustainable energy. But at the same time, you're looking at a CEO of a company that's just literally rooting America into the ground right now, running it completely into the ground. It's just disgusting. This is not the America that I want. And when I walk in into the company the last maybe half year, 6-8 months, my wife just begs me to go in every day. It's hard when you have certain morals and ethics and you watch what he's doing, aligning himself with literally big oil and crap. And not only does his little ideology gets muddy, but you see what a narcissist and what a complete hypocrite he is. And finally, when I went in there, I didn't see Tesla. I saw Trump. It's just as simple as that. And I had a choice. And so I made that choice. Morally, ethically, I can't work for that. It's just no good anymore. I can work somewhere else. That's just the bottom line. So I had to make a stand.
And you were trying to organize the UAW. How did he treat the UAW? I know that 700 workers were fired by him. Did he shut down that organizing effort?
Oh, of course. And completely, as far as I'm concerned, completely illegally. From the very jump, they did everything wrong. Probably under his complete condonement. I don't know exactly what went down, but I can tell you I was there, so I saw what went on.
Happened? What happened when that was taking place?
Oh, they literally, I call it victimized the workers. Anybody with a shirt on, which was our right to do back then, to represent what we wanted in that company, for the betterment of the workers. Anybody wearing a shirt that represented the UAW, they were literally not only found, organized, blackballed, that was it. They were fired. They were just taken out. And all of them supposedly had, I guess it was their performance wasn't up to snuff. So everybody learned to every 6 months grab your performance reviews, print them out. That way you have them right there. Because the moment they let you go, you can't go in and actually say anything about how your performance was. And these were a lot of good workers. And of course, a lot of them were back in the newbie days too. Which, and it's just wrong. It's just wrong. He's a narcissist with complete control. And part of the thing that kills me now, it just kills me, is a lot of people, come on, man, this country's been misled pretty badly. We got 51% of the country has, been fooled again. We need to go back and look what happened with 1930s, in Germany. I swear to God, I know my history is too well to see what's going on, to see all the mirrors of just how it's going and how it's just representing America. It's just killing me right now. It really does. It just disgusts me. I have no job right now, but I feel like a weight's been lifted off me because I'm not going to that damn place anymore. It was just too much finally.
And he is also in charge now of the government, the DOGE, and getting rid of health and safety people, CDC. What happened at that Tesla plant during the COVID pandemic?
Oh, it was terrible. I watched all this unfold. I like to protect workers. It's so funny. I was never such a big advocate until I came to Tesla and I saw how they treated the people. It's terrible, especially young kids. I'm older, so I'm wiser. I've been in the working force 40 years. One of these young kids never has. It's just terrible how they treat them. I was just completely amazed. And again, they're going to burn you out because they're young and you'll get hurt. Let's get somebody else. You just replace just a revolving door inside there. I set up at the very beginning. That's what made the union actually, just such a great, again, just look at the records. Look at your facts. UAW, the amount of safety compared to how Tesla was ran in the very beginning. And what happened? Elon Musk doesn't care about people. He really doesn't. I stated that in a news thing. This basically doesn't have the workers' best interest at heart at all when he's going to open up early. And that was against the Alameda County CDC lady who said, don't do this until everything's in place. And again, people want to keep their jobs. They don't know what to do. But I know that my wife is actually has a high, she's had a lot of different problems with her. So I wore a mask, and I still wore a mask up every single day till I left in January by wearing a mask. It was they really don't care about the workers, so that was just all on you basically.
He defied an order by the Alameda County Department of Health
Department.
What did he say at that time? Because all the small businesses were being shut down, but apparently he felt he was above the law, he didn't have to shut down?
Exactly. And he actually, I would say, defied or dared somebody to come in and arrest him. If you have to arrest anybody, just arrest me, was his little quote inside there. Again, I waited another week longer until it was actually safe by the CDC to go inside there. But he went ahead and was pushed ahead. I mean, a lot of these young kids think they're invisible. I thought I was invincible back when I was young, too. You know, and people are getting, a lot of people got COVID in there. A lot of people got COVID. You know, I was just beside myself again.
And did he cover that up, the COVID pandemic at the plant?
He can through HIPAA. They will use anything they can to get and finagle what they want to get, you know, just basically through. Whether there's nothing going on here, there's no infections in here, or I'm sorry, that's HIPAA, we can't tell you about that. But when you see a whole group of people are gone the next day in that area and you hear about that, they're off on COVID, you go, oh, you know, and so it was just, again, you're working in a factory setting. I can't explain this enough to you. You're gonna be bumping into people lots of times when you're working on these cars. And so not to wear a mask or not to be protected, it was just insane. And that's before you had the shot. You know, so it was just insane. You're risking your life going in there. You know, a lot of us were for that time until she cleared it, until the CDC lady went ahead and said it was okay to go in. It's just wrong. Him and Bezos tried to turn around and take out the NLRB. It's going to be disbanded. Again, this is a breakdown of our government, fascism at its best. I'm sorry, but everything seems to be political nowadays. And that's just what's come, whether it's, you know, work, whatever it might be. And this is just terrible. The oligarchs of the world are taking over. And I'm sorry, but the young workers need to get educated, because this is they need to get research. They need to understand critical thinking, because I mean, older, we see it right away, and we know our history. Most of these young cats, they don't even understand history at all, so they're being played over again. That's just the way I see it right now.
And
you know, my own set of challenges, but I'm not walking in and working for that idiot anymore. That, you know, that selfish fool. You know, look what he's done to his children. Look what he's doing to America.
And black workers at that plant have said it's like working at a plantation. What does that mean? And how were black workers treated at that plant?
Very poorly. It's part of the problem, and this is, I think a lot of it stems from this. The young kids these days will use the N-word just repeatedly as a positive thing and just normal talk. A lot of older people don't like that, black and white. My stepson used to use it all the time. That kind of grated on me because it kind of bothered me. You know, I'm old school white. You know, that was never a good word. And to a lot of blacks, that is a terrible, terrible word. But they, I didn't understand in the very beginning, and they thought it was funny. And what's funny is they would tell the older gentleman those kind of words. And it was meant as a, you know, joke, to be comical. This is not funny. And again, we never had any kind of sensitivity training ever in there. For the first 3 or 4 years, it was just rampant. People were looking at ladies up and down, just like it was a club scene inside there. It was wrong. And young kids had to be taught how to be respectful to other workers and how to act around other workers. That was never done. Not done until just lately. I've been here over 10 years. I can't believe I lasted that long, you know? And again, if you don't start with a good, you treat it like it was a startup company where you had 15 employees, you know, gathered around a work area and everything was chill. You know, his main thing was, don't be a jerk, was in his little manual. Well, he better learn that rule himself. But that was his main thing for how to act. No, that's not. You act respectful to other people. You take your, you know, their information. I know the one guy on the elevator, he kept saying, please don't say the N-word around me. I come from the South, and it's just not a good word. And the kids were laughing at him, you know, and it just killed him. You know, and they all go back to the plantation. It's like, oh, my God. And it's just, they don't understand the sensitivity was never there. And again, you need to get a work atmosphere where you're able to work without being bothered by other people. And supervisors didn't see that because they were never trained that way. Things are a little different now, yeah. But they were starting way behind the barrel a long time ago. It was just terrible insensitivity. You know, the amount of just basically out-out racism. I understand he's Mr. Apartheid. You can't tell me he didn't grow up with black maids inside there and everything else for him. Come on now. The dad owned a mine. So.
And also there were a large number of injuries at that facility, and apparently he was engaged in workers' comp fraud. He was set up a company. Why don't you talk about the injured workers and the fact that he apparently did not want them to report to a hospital because it would affect his workers' comp claims.
Correct. One of the most inviting things about the UAW is their safety record versus how Tesla was in the beginning. People are dropping like flies. It's terrible. I don't know how to live properly. I'm not trying to, I don't know how to live properly, and my life is more important than my job. But a lot of the young kids, and I was that way too, and they're getting hurt. And the supervisors are just like, just work through it. They don't know what to do. They're told to push these cars out. So it was, again, push, push, push. If you heard something was wrong, well, look, just 2 more hours, you can make it, go home and rest. And that's not how it works. And, you know, my God, the Newt Advocate Center right at that time. Again, a lot of these young kids, it was their very first job, and they wanted to impress. And they ended up, you know, blowing out their backs, hurting their wrists. There's a lot of repetitive injuries. One of the problems he did is he didn't transfer people a lot. This is, again, everything I'm stating is my opinion for what I saw inside there. But they didn't transfer people a lot. If you were good on your job, you stayed on your job. What happened? You burned out your arms. You burned out your shoulders. It was just terrible. You know, and again, if you're working good, well, I don't want you to leave that job and work somewhere else. You're fitting in great there. But they're not thinking about rotation and the workers themselves. None of that was done. Ergonomics wasn't thought about either. We had to work on the lift assist, all the different machines. We started -3 on the scale of ergonomics, put it that way, especially with the heavier parts.
And Trump has made a big issue about the immigrants, attacks on immigrant workers. Aren't there a lot of immigrants at that plant at Fremont Tesla?
There's a huge amount. It's just so damn sad. Last year, I talked to one lady there. I know, again, it's not my business how long she's been here, but she ran out there. I'm pushing to get my citizenship so Trump can't, take me out of the country. And I was just shaking my head. This is just so disgusting. You know, it's just so freaking disgusting. They've got a lot of Asian. I'm not saying they're from China, but a lot of different, and a huge amount of contractors, you know, from different areas.
They're from Afghanistan. They're workers from all over the world at that point, aren't there?
Yes, they are. And Fremont has a huge Middle Eastern population. And believe it or not, there's a huge amount of engineers there's more engineers that I see there of Middle Eastern descent, which is great. And here's another thing, too, just want to throw up. He's so mad about DEI. Are you kidding? Tesla is DEI, you idiots. You know, DEI is a positive thing. That means everybody. And I can't believe what he's doing, from the plane crashes to everything else. What's so funny is, Musk is going to sit there and tell him, oh, yeah, DEI, that's D-I-E, that's what it really stands for. You know what, idiot? You've got DEI at Tesla. You have a whole department there for DEI. If you look around, you hire DEI. So he can't, again, hypocrisy rules supreme at Tesla and in the government right now.
And what do you think about what people in this country, working people should do about what is a fascist government Project 2025, which is a fascist program? It seems like they're implementing it regardless of the cost to the American people and American workers.
You know, what's funny is, and this is, I mean, this is just me. I'm very liberal. It took me a while to accept that America has been misled this badly. It's just going to be a short amount of time, I believe. And again, everything is going to go up with the prices. And I think the majority of people are not going to be fooled enough. Fascism takes out the representation of reporters like you, Steve. The first thing they do, you know, is to try to take out the actual basic amendment, the First Amendment, by your reporting. So basically, with fascism being in place, all he's going to do is try to knock everybody out of the government. So you can't report. Nobody can do anything else. And they can't protest because they won't know why this is all being caused again. And he'll go ahead and say, oh, again, the plane crashes. That wasn't because of deregulation. That was because of DEI. Get it? And again, I think Americans, although very stupid, I'm sorry, but they need to do research. They really do. They're going to wise up in a year, maybe half a year. I'm going to be protesting everywhere. And I'll probably be the first president ever. He will be to send troops, you know, actually against Americans and open fire on him, because they'll see how he is. He's a psychopath.
That was former Tesla Fremont assembly plant worker Branton Phillips speaking to Pacifica's Steve Seltzer. That concludes today's edition of Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and affiliates who contribute to the production of this show. Today's program was produced by the Capitalism, Race, and Democracy Collective with contributions from J.R. Valray and Steve Seltzer. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, capitalismraceanddemocracy.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button. Follow us on X, formerly Twitter, at PacificaCRD. I've been your host, Ian Garrison. Thanks for listening.